Okay, so let's hope the mic doesn't fall this time. The mic falls a lot. I really don't want it to, though. I really don't like when it falls. So, all right. Hey, everybody, and Hey, everybody, welcome back to a brand new episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Normally, this is an audio program, but I am going to toss this up on YouTube. So if you are watching this on YouTube, you're great, and I love you. So hopefully, I don't shake my desk too much this time, and hopefully, my microphone doesn't fall down the way that it continues to do, seemingly. But I haven't invested in a new mic stand, like a new mic arm, in a long time. But anyway, yeah, so there are some fun things to talk about today that I want to get into. I realize this is becoming like a catchphrase for me, but I realize I have not done an episode in quite a long time. Sometimes just like stretches of weeks just pass through. Like weeks will just go by and I'll go like, oh yeah, I should do another one. It's just that, you know, like when things get chaotic, when they move around a lot, when things are unpredictable, when things get tough, times get tough, you never know what's going to be thrown at you. And then you find yourself basically like, because Artsy Fartsy Immigrants is a passion project, you know, I don't make any money from it. Those are the kinds of things that end up like falling to the wayside first and foremost. So hopefully you can forgive me for these gaps of late, and we can jump right into it. So, funny thing, I want to talk about unhealthy male behavior. and this is a universal thing, but it is something that I notice a lot in, I don't want to say just strictly Bavarian men. Let me clarify that. So I do want to talk about unhealthy male behavior, but it's not as if I specifically mean like just unhealthy, like Bavarian men's behavior, because that wouldn't be fair. There's unhealthy like male behavior all over the world. And we're going to get into that too. We're going to get into some things here that are in the culture right now that I find just absolutely repulsive and insane. But I do want to start with this particular kind of unhealthy Bavarian male behavior, which is this kind of like brute, overt machismo, like ownership of the room and the moment. And so I'll just go into the story and then you're going to know what I mean. So it's Easter, right? Easter weekend, and I'm in the mountains in southern Germany. I've been invited to join a group of men. I know only one of them, by the way. And the one that I know has invited me, who does not fit into this group whatsoever, to join this table of absolute, mostly, not all, but like mostly just like brute warthogs of men at this table to, in their own words, not my words, but in their words, get away from the families for a while. I didn't honestly know that. It sounds like, you know, I've been around like friends, good guys, good people who like make the joke, but you know, they're joking, but they're like, yeah, gotta get away from the old ball and chain over here. And you know, they're joking, you know, like, you know that they love and support their families and that they're like equals in the household. This is the kind of situation I never thought I would be in, where like they say it and they mean it. They're like, I'm here to get you away from the family, get you away from any of the struggles. Like we're all here to get away from the families. And it's like, oh, okay. So I go, because like, what else am I going to do in the mountains? And I join this group, right? So I show up late, and a lot of them are already pretty drunk. It's at this old restaurant. Germans will know this term, like Wirtshaus. You know, it's like a old German restaurant bar type situation, right? And I go in there, and I don't know anybody except for the person who invited me. And the whole group is already pretty tipsy. You know, they They had steaks before I got there, so I didn't get a steak, but that's cool. It was my fault for being late. And then at first it was fine, right? Like, I know a few people in there, not as well as the host, but like, I've seen these faces. That's what I mean. Like, I've seen a few of these faces before. And they know who I am because I'm the only American who ever is in that area anyway, or in those circles now and then. So I sit down. A beer is presented to me, which is cool. I like that. I appreciate that. I can get behind that. I start catching up on, you know, on drinking and trying to be, you know, just pleasant and polite to the strangers. You know, there's a guy next to me and he says something in this like very deep, you know, Southern German mountain dialect, which essentially just should be like Cantonese or something. Like there's no chance. Like I'm not perfectly fluent in German by a long shot. This is a completely different language, but that's a different topic completely. But I've talked about that before. So this person drunkenly is like, and I'm like, what? And then we start talking, and he's friendly enough, you know, and I say, well, how do you know Josef here? And he's like, I said, are you like old friends or do you work together? And he goes, both. And I went, okay, this is a really fun chat. No, but I'm kidding. He was nice. But we're talking a little bit, you know, and immediately there is a presence in the room, a vibe, a sixth sense, if you want to go that route, where I'm talking to this guy. He's nice. I look across the table to the person who invited me, a man named Josef. And he says, you know, did you get dropped off at the door of this restaurant? Because what you should know is there's a very long, like highway, right? And then where there is a gondola, like you know, you drive past like a skiing area. And there's like a cabin and a bridge and a gondola that like you go up, you pay a ticket and like you can go ski or whatever. And at that area where that gondola is where you can get out and walk the path up to this restaurant. It's maybe, well, this will be the whole point of how long it takes, right? So I got dropped off right there at the bottom and walked the rest of the path, which isn't bad. It's not like a hike. It's just, you know, it's a little steep now and then, but it's okay. It's absolutely fine. I think I might have just, you know, I was on my phone. I took my time. I think it was more like 15, 20 minutes of a walk. And what these guys had done is started together around 10:30 in the morning or something and walked from super far away, which was more probably like 90 minutes of walking and hiking together. So sad. I missed that. Oh, the worst. I can't believe my terrible timing. Oh, God. I missed it. Oh, no. And I'm talking across the table to Josef, and I go, no, I didn't get dropped off here at the door. I got dropped off where that gondola, like where that, you know, this, there's like a bus stop and like whatever. It's like, it's right there on the highway and you can just get out. I said, I got dropped off there. And then I walked up the rest of the way, like 20 minutes. Like, you know, Americans also, we just toss out, you know, when I say like, yeah, I think, you know, it's like 20 minutes. I don't mean this was 60 seconds times 20 to the dot. You know, I don't, no, I mean like somewhere around 15, 20-ish. Who knows? I wasn't counting. I didn't have I wasn't checking my pulse and watching my Fitbit like, okay, if I keep this pace up, I will be there so much quicker than the others. Yeah, I can rub it in their faces. No, I was on my phone like, and the world goes round, the world goes round. You know? Oh, what's that song I was thinking of the other day that was like, yeah. Imagine me like walking up the hill super slow on my phone like, I'm like a bird, I'll only fly away. I'm like a bird. It's like, I'm really just like strolling as slow as I possibly can. I get up there. I tell him, yeah, I'll be 20 minutes. And then there's just enough normal German coming out of the mouth of this other guy. Not the nice guy I was sitting next to, but like a middle person who I have not even been introduced to. But this just like absolute just stranger looks over to Yosef, and in dialect, but just enough for me to get it, he looks at me, he's like,
how did this guy take 20 minutes to do that? How do you take 20 minutes for that walk?
And I knew, like, I knew what he said. He didn't know that I knew what he said. And then Yosef like looks at him, he's like, and then looks at me and he's like, he says, how did you take 20 minutes? I was like, I got it. And I said, that's a cool way to, like, that's a really cool way to start a conversation. I was like, I don't know. It's not a race, man. Like, who cares?
How did you make that walk take 20 minutes?
Nice to meet you too. Who cares, man? Who cares? This is the thing about this is what I mean about this like small town, like German, Bavarian, like machismo toxicity thing where it's just like, there was no like, hi, I'm Toby or whatever his name is. I don't even know. He never introduced himself too, which is like ace. But like, there's no part of him that's like, oh, he's been invited to the same thing I'm invited to. There must be a reason why maybe this is a nice person or that we could click on something. But it's this thing of like, you know, a guy like maybe between 41 and 46 with one of those like flat bill tall tops, like skateboarder hats with a gray hoodie, like Patagonia, and then like hiking boots. And he's like, a finished beer, like snapping at the waiter. He's like,
how did this guy take 20 minutes to get up this hill? Hey, noch ein Helles bitte.
It's like, dude, why don't you just go, oh, hi. You know what I mean? Anyway, that's just the beginning. So here's where things get like, but what I'm doing right now is just giving you like the amuse-bouche, right? This is just a little sprinkle of like, oh, it's these kind of guys. Well, it's not every guy. I will be fair to say that the first guy I spoke to, even though it was a little uncomfortable, was friendly. Then I spoke to a couple of other guys that I had met before, just briefly. Small anecdote before I get to the big story here, the whole reason for bringing any of this up, is that there's this one guy there, and he is a furniture maker. And, you know, like a hobby musician, a good musician. And he has had quite a lot of success as a furniture maker. So, you know, he's got some money. I don't know, like, what his status is financially, obviously. Like, who would think to even ask stuff like that? So I don't know. But I would say that... What's funny is like, you know, there's this joke online of like, if I won the lottery, I wouldn't tell anybody, but there would be signs. And then the joke is always like a fridge full of cheese or like, you know, I don't know, just like things that you want to get that you don't always buy for yourself. But if you won the lottery, you would have them, right? Or you'd be like, you know, in line at Disneyland. Like, if I won the lottery, I wouldn't tell anyone, but there would be signs. You know, then it's just like the window of like a plane as you're going to the Bahamas or something. So this guy, you know, he's a very nice guy. He's very nice to me. And he actually was, I think, the only guy that asked any questions about my life, which is always a very pleasant surprise in that area. And so this isn't shade on him. This is just a funny story. Furniture maker, successful. He starts to leave, right? Like after a couple of beers, maybe let's just say like around about an hour after I'm there, he's leaving. He stands up and he's in like hiking gear or cycling gear and he's putting everything together. And on his wrist, I notice his watch. Now, a lot of guys or people in general, when they pass a certain age, they start getting interested in certain specific items, hobbies, interests. And, you know, a lot of guys will at some point, let's just say, you know, traditionally might get into like classic cars, you know. Oh, man, is that a 1964 Chevy, for example? Or they might, you know, some people get into collecting, you know, like I finally got the B-side, you know, John Lennon unreleased vinyl, you know, I won my bid on eBay. You know, there's like certain obsessions, watching like World War II documentaries, things like that, right? Reliving life through a new interest. For me, it's becoming watches, which is funny because it's an extraordinarily expensive and lucrative market of items that I will never be able to afford, nor do I even really want to buy them. I just love looking at them and learning a little bit about them. Like, I watched, I forgot what movie it was or TV show I watched recently, but I paused it to be like, that's a nice watch. This is off topic gently, but if you're listening to this, then you know that that's my specialty. I get really into tastefully minimal watches. Like if it's a classic clock face, you know, very just minimal, smooth, nice trim, you know, maybe like a leather band. It has to be the right person in the right watch. For example, like a James Bond watch, right? Not like one that has gadgets in it, but when he goes to a gala to like look nice and just, you know, schmooze the owner of the club or something, usually James Bond's wearing like an AP or some sort of Rolex that's very minimal, clean, beautiful. And those watches are just, it's like buying a jet, you know, it's crazy. So, I mean, it's not like I'm craving to purchase one. It's just nice to look at. It's like looking at an old car. So he stands up, I notice his watch, and I've looked at that watch online before, and his Rolex, is so expensive that I could have pooped my pants, okay? It's so expensive that I threw up a little bit in my mouth. And thankfully, he's a nice enough guy, and I've known him a little bit over the years, where I was just like, I need to see that, and just like took his wrist and was like, excuse me, sir, I need to look at that watch. And he was happy I did it, because of course, if you're going to spend that much money on a statement piece, you want someone to listen to the statement. So I pulled that bad boy right up nice and close. Like, you know, if you're watching this as opposed to listening, this is like a 30 or 40 euro Casio watch. I like how it looks on me, but that's about my budget. And that's cool. You know why? I love that, like, you can buy something that you like and it feels good and it looks good and it's an extremely reasonable budget. And here's the funny thing. I'm looking at his watch and I'm like, that's probably like at least a 25,000 euro watch. Oh, it's so expensive. It's so expensive. Oh my God. It's at least that. At least, I mean, maybe on resale, it might be like a 50,000 euro watch. I have no idea. It's insane what Rolexes go for. Not to mention APs. Oh my God. Anyway, it's crazy. It's insane. It's like the upper echelon people. But you know, there's like what I was talking to him about was I was like, you know, I really love like watches that fit the person. I hope I was kind of subtle with this, but I was like, I love when there's like a watch that fits the person, case in point, and then there's the statement piece. And I basically just told him, I was like, dude, this is like, what a statement piece, you know, in so many words. And he was like, yeah, thanks, man. And he knows, I mean, we talked about watches, so he knows I know what that watch cost. And then as I'm holding his wrist, he like leans over and looks at my little like 50 buck or whatever it was, 40 or 50, little Casio here. And he goes, oh, I like your watch too. And I yanked my hand back and I said, don't you pity me. Don't pity me. I was like, I'm not a jester in your king's court. Let me just admire your actual watch and let me put this away. Don't. Oh my God. Oh my God. It feels like going to the Met Gala in my pajamas and seeing like Rihanna in a decked out like Dolce & Gabbana or like Gucci hand-stitched, you know, crazy diamond-studded gown, and me being like, let me just look at that. Wow. Incredible. And her going, you look nice too. You know what I mean? It's just like, dude, come on. So, okay, that happened. He's a nice guy. He left. Here's where the crazy, like, we're getting back now to the crazy, like, toxic machismo stuff. This is where things went off the rails. So, I was going to walk down the hill with my boy Daniel. So there was one guy there. Like for new listeners, I'm not going to explain all the backstories and everything. If you're a longtime listener, then you know who Yosef and Daniel are. So I, you know, Daniel was there too. You know, old, long time partner in my life. Good guy. And he didn't want to stay long. Excuse me. He didn't want to stay long because the next day was all this Easter stuff. A lot to prep, a lot to plan, you know, a lot to like lock in for. And I leaned over to him at some point and was like, hey, when you want to go, like, let's go together, you know? And he was like, yeah, cool. So some more time passed. And then eventually I realized that Danny boy was hammered. And he didn't want to be. He didn't want to get there. He did not want to be at that point. You know, there's a thing that's very common in these kinds of bars where you mark how many drinks you had, how many beers you drank on your coaster. Sort of the classic, like, one line, one line, one line, one, two, three, four, and then, like, the slash through. Some people call that, like, making a fence, you know, like, around the yard, like a fence. You know, some of these guys will have, like, competitions about how many fences, you know, they can drink or whatever. Which, honestly, five beers, it's not nothing. It's not that much, but it's not nothing, okay? And when I sat down with him and had that conversation, he was on beer four. And I said, how many strikes do you want to have on this coaster before we go? And he said, six. And I was like, that's cool. Cool. That sounds good to me. I can do that. I can do six. Not like I could also drink six, but I was like, when you're done at six, we can go. I think I was on number three at the time. And then everyone talked, you know, people stepped out for cigarettes and we came back in, people were peeing. And then suddenly, I realized that Daniel had like nine. And it didn't help that the owner of the restaurant, you know, is part of the friend group too. So he just kept rolling out shot glasses full of schnapps. Not a good idea. Heads up. Hey, Jordan's tip for visitors to Germany. If you're not, you know, if you're drinking a lot of German beer, don't take the schnapps. Don't take the schnapps. You're going to do it if you've already gotten a little tipsy. Try to keep some agency about yourself and just realize you're knocking yourself out of your shoes if you do this. And especially if you're over 30, it's like, woof, brother. You are signing up for a contract you can't pay out, big guy. You are taking a loan out with the sharks in the dirty neighborhood of town. And I realized that he did this. Suddenly, you know, I've known him for a long time. And suddenly, like, his eyes do this thing where, like, it's a gentle cross. And then imagine it's just looking just past you. So I'm like, hey, Dan, are you good? It's like, yeah, I'm good, yeah. And then, like, the slow, droopy eye. Yeah, what are you talking? Yeah. Yeah, of course. And it was like, oh, man. Okay, so I was tipsy, but I also understood, like, yeah, we should go. So I was far more sober than he was. So I sort of took the lead. I was like, okay, yeah, we're going to go. We got to go. Let's do it. It wasn't even late. It was like, I don't know, 7-something. Like, you know, they had been drinking since noon, and I was drinking since like 2:30, almost 3. So I was like, yeah, let's go. And we went up together to the counter, and the owner's wife, very lovely lady, was like, you know, counting up the beers. And I saw Daniel like open his wallet, take out cash. He paid for mine too, because it was a cash only bar and I didn't know. So he very kindly covered that. And then she gave him the change. He put his wallet away. And he was like getting his jacket on. And this is where things start going downhill. There's this guy who had been at the table the entire time. Like, you know, he was with the original group from the start of the day. I forgot his name, or maybe I never learned it. But he had these interesting teeth where, you know when you watch a cartoon cat, like let's say you're watching like Tom and Jerry or something, and or any cartoon, and like these movers are like moving like a grand piano, like out of an apartment window or something, and then like the rope breaks, and then the piano just like Wile E. Coyote just smashes on top of the cartoon character, and then they pop out of the top of the hood where the strings are, and all their teeth are just like these spread out piano keys. You know, that's what his mouth looked like. He had these crazy splayed out like piano key teeth. I will never forget that. I've never seen teeth like that. And he, you know, like in feet and inches, I'm 6'1". I'm not 6'2 fully, but like, you know, it's like I'm 6'1", whatever. I was going to say like I'm just somewhere in between because I'd measured it once, but like whatever. Who am I trying to impress, right? And then in centimeters, I guess that's like what, 185, something like that? And 185, 186, I don't know. But this guy was easily like 6'5". So, you know, let's say like 4 inches. So he's, I don't know, like that, you know, maybe on camera is like, he's significantly taller, you know, like you feel it. And he's like he's a handy worker. He's got calloused hands. He's like a blue collar guy. He cycles, he hikes, he runs, he works, you know, he's very like touching his arm. You're like, fuck, this guy could absolutely punch a hole through my mouth, out the back of my head while still smoking a cigarette. You're like, oh, dang it. The reason I even bring up his strength is because of what's about to happen. So we are paid out and Daniel's putting on his jacket. As he's like stumbling with the cross-eyed putting on the jacket, I say, wait for me. I'm going to pee and then we can go together. And he just kind of nods his head. Like he's not even talking anymore. I go pee. I come back. Suddenly Mr. Piano Teeth is blockading the entrance to the restaurant. He's standing in front of the door. Not a cool thing to do. You know, I found out later after what is about to transpire in this story, found out later, guy's got like 4 kids. So I'm like, oh, he's acting like a high school bully. And you're a dad, dude, like, get it together. live a little bit less crazy. Learn how to share upon wisdom and not just pass on the worst traits that you have. And so he's blocking the door. And everyone's like, hey, you guys, you stay for another beer. I'm looking at Daniel. I'm like, he's either going to vomit or pass out. Like at some point, like at this point, I really, really, really wanted to go. I do have a thing about like, when I really want to leave a place and I can't, I really start to get like very irritable. I don't know if that's connected to neurodivergency. I honestly don't know. But if it's like in my head that like, I need to leave now. I want to leave now and I can't. I start to lose my shit. I really start to lose it. I try to keep it cool externally, but I really inside I'm like, it's really not panicky, but like it's like so much anger and so much stress inside my chest where I'm like, no, but I need, like I want it, no, but I want to go and you're in the way. And it's crazy. I've had that like as long as I can remember. Like I know I need to go now. And like someone be like, oh, you can't, no, bro. It's like, I wish nothing except for the worst of your life to be. I want lightning from the gods above to strike you down into ash. Can you please move? Yes, like I feel that inside, you know, in my body. I'm like, I want nothing else but for the wrath of God to pound down upon your life and all of your loved ones now. But externally, I'm like, please, man, can I just leave? Come on, please. Anyway, I am there next to Daniel watching this guy be like, And so then the first strategy comes to mind where I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to play this like his way. All the bros are at the table like, turds. And he's at the door also like, you can't go. Can't go anywhere until you kiss me. He didn't say that, but it's kind of, I mean, it's just like, dude, why do you want to keep all the men in this small little room? Like, dude, just just go to Berlin, like live your life. You know what I mean? So I think I have to play his game. So it's so stupid because this guy is basically just like a rock in human form. I wrap my arms around him like, ha ha ha, like play wrestle, like trying to move, like physically move him from the door. No shot. Terrible decision. No chance for that. I didn't stand a chance. He's 6'5". He weighs as much as me, and it's only muscle. He doesn't have any fat. So I like grabbed around him, and then he grabbed around my shoulders, and I was like, I'm cooked, dog. I'm like, oopsie daisy. I hope he doesn't strangle me, because he could with one hand. So he barely moves like 2 inches, and then I let go, and then he lets go, and then everyone's, and then he's laughing, and then the other guys are still like, oh. I'm like, you guys are all 49 years old. What are we doing here? Like, this is a thing that happens so much in the southern parts of Germany. That's why I also have to like reiterate that I don't necessarily like attribute that to just Germans. It's guys, you know, it's just like small town, hardworking guys. But I've only really, really had it that intense after the age of 25 in Bavaria. I guess because the beer is so strong. So I'm there. He lets go. And then I remember that by the bathroom, there's an exit door that's cracked open because that's where they dump the mop buckets. So I start edging backwards. And then Daniel and this guy start grappling. And that really bothered me because I'm like, dude, Daniel's borderline comatose. Like, he can't talk anymore. And this big guy, Daniel's my height, but thinner. He's got less weight on him. And this guy could just manhandle him, you know? And I'm like, oh no, these drunk, oh man, the last thing I want to be around is just like drunk dummies wrestling in some mountain bar. So I'm like, well, I'm out. So I step a few things back and I try it. Like, I see him let go of Daniel for a moment. And I try to go like, Daniel. Daniel can't hear anything. I mean, I could have punched Daniel in the face and he would have been like, do you guys see that butterfly? You know what I mean? Did you guys hear? I would be like, poof, and you go, did you guys hear that? So I just go like, well, I'm out. Sorry. You know, I thought maybe they'd have mercy and actually let him go out the front door since they stopped wrestling. So I just bail. I go out the back door and I walk around the street to the front of this restaurant. By the way, they had like reserved the entire place for this table. So the whole thing was empty except for these guys. I go around to the front but out of sight of the windows. And I think any minute now, they're going to let Daniel go. He's going to come out the front door and then I'm going to say, hey man, I'm here. I can walk with you. I waited for Daniel. I was like, I'm out, but I'm not going to like just leave him there. So I'm out front. And as I'm thinking to myself, man, do I really have to go back around? Because it's been a few minutes since I've heard anything. Like, why is Daniel not coming outside? That's when I hear the loudest crash of glass. It was shocking. Like, it sounded like someone took a glass vase 20 feet from me. Just, you know, like, I don't know, 10 meters. Or I don't know how many meters, whatever. Like, it just, like, close. And just football spiked that shit. Just whoosh. And I was like, oh my God, did they like push Daniel onto, I don't know, like, did they have a fight? Did someone smash a beer bottle on someone? Like, did it get violent? Like, my thought was like, this guy can't talk. And there's this big broody, like dumb Shrek, like held back in school for 2 years, idiot guy who is for all of the worst reasons you could ever possibly imagine being just like a violent, brutish, like turd person. And there's Daniel who can't like think or talk. And I'm just wondering like, did they get violent now? So I go, shit, I gotta go check on Daniel. So I go back around the side of the building through my sneaky back door, pun intended, no. I go back around through the back door, go to the front, and what I see is all of the guys are still just at the table like, And Daniel's on all fours, drunk as a skunk, sweeping up shattered glass into a dustpan from one of the window panes of the front door. Which means that this big doof wrestled Daniel again and must have knocked like an elbow through one of the window panes. Daniel has no memory of exactly what happened. Sadly, I feel bad for him because I'm sure that's a lot of guilt. I would have guilt too. But mostly, I would say it's actually 100% the fault of the other guy. Because he's the one who's like, oh, I can't leave. So I take the dustpan out of Daniel's hand. I help him clean the glass up. And then I felt like, I don't know, he and I are like the same age, but I felt like a big brother because I leaned over to him. After the glass was all taken care of, I leaned over to him and I like I grabbed his arm like this and I said, we're not saying bye. We're slipping out now. The door is free. We're going now. We're leaving now, Daniel. And he just went like, just nodded his head up and down. So we slip out, grabbed his jacket. We're out front. We walk like just a bit down the street. And then all of a sudden we hear like this, and the window had opened. And Josef sticks his head out. For those who know who I'm talking about, it's the young one, obviously. And he sticks his head out and he's like, hey, Daniel, let's get one more beer. Come on, sit down, get one more beer. And I praise Daniel for this because I think he was at the right amount. He was at the right amount of drunk to not have a filter of like being kind for kind's sake anymore. Cause it was just like this. All right, guys, Daniel, come on back and sit down and have a beer. No. Oh, come on. Just come sit down and have one beer. No, Josef. It was so like, okay. It was like, let's go home. Let's go home. I can't wait to just go home. Then it was the fun, like, 20-minute walk back down that hill. Which, by the way, have no guardrails and are on a steep mountainside. So at one point when Daniel was like, I gotta pee. I stood behind him, like imagine this is his back. He's peeing that way. And I'm just there like waiting to grab his jacket because I'm waiting for him to like, you know, just waiting for him to fall. I did have to grab him once though because a car was coming down this little skinny path and I just knew he wouldn't move out of the way like in a, either in time or just like he would just go like, oh, a car, and just like just down the hill. Later, I did find out that the guys who stayed until late did walk that path and they did fall down the hill. So good. I want that to happen. But it's so funny, man. Like, you know, this kind of like this dude was like in his 40s. It was supposed to be just a pleasant like getting beers, like getting away from the families kind of thing. And when there's just some like brutish idiot with splayed out like a cat who fell into a piano kind of teeth, literally wrestling, it's just if you want to kiss a guy, there's a lot of places you can go do that, man. What's the you know? I mean, I'm making jokes about that, but I think what's really under there under that surface is just this. Strange, like that's where like I guess their validation, their self-validation comes from, you know, because they don't, I, you know, there's no what's it called, like there's no openness in places like that with people like that for any sort of vulnerability or emotional intelligence whatsoever. So their self-validation comes from being tough or like being tough funny or being trying, like thinking they're getting validation of like the tough guy laughter, like, oh yeah, man, I'm strong. You can't leave, dude. See, I'm blocking the door, guys, you see that? They can't leave because I'm here, right? You proud of me, dad? Are you proud of me? Do you think I'm funny? Do you love me? It's like that, you know, it's just, hurt people. I mean, it's a cheesy phrase, but it's so true, man. Like, it's so easy. Like, it's like watching dogs in a cage. You're like, oh, that one bit the other one, so he's gonna, yeah, there he goes. It's so crazy to me that there's still, it's prevalent everywhere, but it's just crazy to me that we're still in a world where, like, why, like, yes, maybe he meant no harm, but it was so over the top intense that he apologized to me, Mr. Tall Guy. I didn't even bring that up. Like, when I came back in and was really trying to get the glass cleaned up and trying to get Daniel to leave, he like came up and was like, "Hey, it's just jokes, yeah." And I was like, the fact that he, this like absolute like goat-headed, you know, bag of sand, thinks to apologize to someone he just met shows that there's like a hint of regret in him, right? You know, this like tough like all this crap. And then he comes to me and being like, we're just joking around, yeah? And I'm like, I mean, what am I going to do? Be like, actually, we should actually do a deep dive on why you even felt to start that issue in the first place. Of course, I'm just going to go, yeah, man, hey, we're cool. It's all good. It's all good. It's all good. And then in my head, I'm like, get out. Go, go, go. Call SEAL Team 6. Let's get this guy out of here. Call the choppers. But outside of him, like, dude, don't worry about it. It's all good. You know, of course. It's wild, you know, just clearly this dude just, you know, I found out later that he was like a bully in high school. Surprise, the surprise of the year. But it's just, that just goes to show that, yeah, he probably didn't have a good home life. And then, you know, like, and then all the surrounding people are like, yeah, actually, feelings are fucking stupid, dude. Like, what? And it's like, hey, you know, if you just actually were self-aware enough and comfortable enough to just talk a little bit about when things aren't going great, then man alive, does it help you grow and to help you just, like, you find circles of people that want that too, you know? It's a crazy, I mean, I'm asking too much from people like this. That's the thing. Like, that world, it's not even, and, you know, not to even shame, like, that area specifically. It's everywhere. It's every place is going to have that. And it's just a shame that it's still prevalent, that it still exists, you know? And even me saying this now, there's probably going to be somebody who's like very far right winged or conservative, super like, you know, tough guy style. And they are going to look at me saying it's healthy to face troubling emotions, be self-aware of them, and try to discover better internal psychological tools that will allow you to digest them and process things in a healthier way so that you can pass on healthier habits to your family and to support your friends and loved ones in a better way. Them hearing me say that, they'll just be like, all right, soy boy, wokey, you know? And I'm like, it's so sad. It's like, dude, you're literally, I'm not saying get a septum piercing, put some blue streaks in your hair and go work at like a small third wave coffee shop or something and like experiment with like, you know, being bisexual. I'm not, that was a stretch. What I'm saying is like, that's not a lot to ask people for. And it's 2026. It's not a lot to ask people to just like, just think about why you make certain decisions. And if you have enough self-awareness to go, well, I know why I do that because this bad thing happened. Hey, that's step one. How about now go work on that? You can't delete it. You can't delete the problems, but you can change how you respond when those problems trigger you. You know what I mean? That's the beautiful thing about like self-processing and therapy. And like, this is really off the rails now, but like, you know, I do think about that stuff like this guy on a deeper level from time to time, because I dealt with that stuff too in high school. I was bullied in high school. I knew these types of guys and I hated these types of guys. And I still hate that type of behavior a lot. And I do see it in Southern Germany a lot. And it reminds me of those times. And it's like, yeah, in the moment I get really tense, but I do have better tools now about how to just sort of get myself through it. If I hate the moment and they're laughing, I just laugh too. I say, yeah, it's all good. Yeah, dude, it's just a joke, man. Yeah, whatever. And then like make a little quip and they laugh and then I can get out. But then later, you know, like when it's quiet, then I think like, man, how are guys still doing this? You know, and it wasn't like he wrestled a drunk man so much that a window shattered. He didn't punch him in the nose, but it's not like it's light years better. But it's still a thing where it's like, how can, like, oh, I don't know. I'm really lucky that I have surrounded myself with male friends who are so connected, you know, to their emotions. It's a really beautiful thing. It's a really wonderful thing. And I'm very, you know, I think, you know, you draw the types of people towards you that match the energy that you're giving off to them, right? So it's not like I would have a lot of friends. I wouldn't have any friends who do that. Who don't do that, I mean. Like, I wouldn't have any friends who can't access their emotions. I have friends who maybe are a little more hesitant, like, from time to time, but only because I might have been one of just a couple of people in their life who actually asks things about how they're doing. But I would say, these days especially, like, all of the male friends that I am close to, I could call them crying. I would hope they could do the same for me. I'm sure they know that. You know, I could call and talk about very, very deep, heavy personal information without trying to be funny or without trying to breeze through it. And I do that, you know, I do that when I'm really struggling. I do call, a good handful of like really, yeah, good friends. So I'm very blessed and lucky for that. And I think I think Denzel Washington said, was it Denzel maybe who said like his only goal in social circles is to surround himself with people who are smarter than him. And I really like that. I would even take it a step further and say, yes, surround yourself with people that are smarter than you, like people you admire, which I do admire all of my friends in so many different ways, but also surrounding yourself with people who are emotionally open, emotionally intelligent, being able to know that you can have a tough day, make a mistake, like be the bad guy, and then talk to a friend about it and not worry that they're going to say, ew, you did that? But them going, oh man, well, yeah, it sounds like, you know, you were really triggered by this. You know, you were vulnerable and you felt embarrassed and man, I've been there. And then them explaining something they've been through. It's like just connection, just saying, hey, you're not crazy. You're not you made a mistake. Sure. But like, I can relate to it. And like, let's just talk about it. And it's just, it's a shame that a lot of guys just do not do that in this day and age, man. It's really nuts. Like, especially with the internet, having so much access to so much, community. But at the end of the day, also the internet makes you lonelier than ever. You know, that's why this was all leading also to, I'm just going to breeze on this, touch on this a little bit, but like for those who don't know, very famous documentary filmmaker, Louis Theroux made a documentary for Netflix that I think everyone should watch. It's called, I think it's like Inside the Manosphere, and kind of like Atmosphere, but Manosphere. And this is a real, like, sort of dystopian internet phenomenon. And it's sadly, like, very, very common. And just thinking about it now, it's exactly what I'm talking about now. It's just so many lost dudes who, like, you know, the thing is, they start so young. Like when I was when you hit puberty, you know, there's different layers to this. And I'm getting lost in the sauce here, but like, first off, when you hit puberty, like your whole brain chemistry changes, and so it's like boom, insecurities out the wazoo. Like you're so insecure, and also in addition to that, you don't really know what your identity is. You know, like who, like you don't know who you want to be like the other cool kids, but even they don't really know who they are. You look back at like high school photos and videos and you remember, like you have this memory of like, oh, that was Jake. He was the cool kid. And then you're like, God, he looks like such a loser. He just happened to date that one girl that you found to be like, you know, like Cinderella at the time, you know? And it's like everything feels so dire, you know? And me imagining being 13, 14, not really knowing my identity, being insecure, which is especially like if you have like, you know, body issues like I've always had, that on top of everything. So, you're being a teenager sucks. It's so tough. Being a teenager sucks. And you find a lot of solace in your friend groups, which I was very lucky to have really, really, really good friends. Not the ones I got arrested with necessarily, but like a couple of like Cody, Todd, people who know that I've talked about them before. But like, you know, a few really, really good people in my life. And but if I imagine like growing up in a world where there was never a time before internet, like never actually understanding or processing a world pre-internet, and you are lost and you are insecure and you look for an answer and you type in this thing that brings into your world like quote unquote solutions or an explanation from some of these people in the manosphere. Oh, that's terrifying to me. Because there isn't an answer. There isn't an answer in that world. It's really like, it's complicated because there are people who know what they're trying to teach to other young men is absolute horseshit. And it's like rage bait and it's getting engagement. And so they know that it's dumb and wrong and stupid, but they are making so money hand over fist. And that's also shallow and horrible because they're basically like, that's the kind of rhetoric that they're preaching is not only horrific in terms of like interpersonal relationships with women or other people, but it's also kind of motivating, I would say, more like loneliness. It's even motivating more loneliness, which could lead to more violence, for example. Not to get too dark, you know, but it's true. It just is true. And then you have the other type of people that they follow. Like there's the ones who know it's crap, but they're doing it just for the money, which is so disgusting. And then you have the ones who actually just are also lost. I hate to even say this name in my life out loud, but there's a right now currently very viral, popular influencer, content creator, idiot, who's like 20 or 21, man, it's so sad. I think his real name is like Blake, I think. I didn't look it up. But his channel name, like his stage name or whatever you call it, like, yeah, whatever, is Clavicular, like your clavicle, but Clavicular. I don't know why. And he is the pioneer and the face of this culture or this trend called looks maxing. You've probably seen things about this either on the internet or on, you know, morning news or something, because it's pretty insane. Looks maxing is just a slang term for, you know, maximizing your appearance, maximizing your looks. So looks maxing. So if you hear someone using like, any sort of term, you know, like if I was practicing guitar and like trying to be the best I could possibly be at guitar, I could say I'm guitar maxing, just for example. So you have some context. So looks maxing, it's really like, it's become such an enormous, like off the mainstream. It's becoming mainstream now, or it has been for a little bit, but it was just like this weird subcultural, strange, I don't know what you'd even call it. Like, it's like a sub, yeah, I don't know. It's like, oh, it's like an ideology. It's like a belief to follow. It's like rules to follow. And it's basically just preaching that a physical appearance is the most important thing. And looking at him, you're like, you are so dead inside. He's a terrible conversationalist. He doesn't have any expression or anything interesting happening on his face at all, except for the fact that it just happens to be symmetrical. Like he, it's, you know what I mean? Like it's really like I have this conversation a lot with friends where it's like, okay, which artist, actor, comedian would you say is conventionally unattractive, but you find them attractive because of who they are? And it's the most fun game ever because people pull out names where you're like, oh yeah, of course. I'm trying to think, I don't know. Let's say, for example, like Philip Seymour Hoffman, right? I find him extremely attractive because he's Philip Seymour Hoffman, dude. Like when he's on screen, he is like a moon to a planet. He's like a magnet just moving oceans with his presence, right? Let me think of a woman. I'm trying to think of an actress that has the same appeal for me. Oh, like, I mean, you know, Mikey Madison, some people would say that they don't find her very attractive, but that's different because I do think she's like more traditionally pretty. Maybe, well, you know what I mean, right? Like, I do want to have a good example though. Like maybe Ayo Edebiri or, wait, is someone calling me right now? Oh yeah, sorry, I was getting a phone call. Anyway, I'm just going to skip through that because it's wasting time. But you know what I mean? So the thing about clavicular is just like, dude, clearly you're broken and it's sad. And you're sharing that with other very vulnerable people at the worst, most vulnerable age they could possibly have. Or like the most vulnerable stage of their life. You're teaching them just like garbage. And it's going to affect them and it's going to make them more lonely. It's going to make them angry. It's going to make them look for answers in places it shouldn't be. And the worst part of it all is that they end up, a lot of these people become like incels and then they blame women. What are you talking about, dog? I had this discussion last night with a friend. I am an average looking man. I don't need people coming over here and being like, dude, what are you talking about? I don't need that. Like I love myself. I'm very happy with myself. And I think I've grown into myself. Like I like my face. I like how I dress. Like I like myself. So don't worry. But I'm also not like delusional. Like I'm not Idris Elba or something. Like I would say average to slightly above average. Okay. I think I have a pretty face. Here's the thing though, right? You know what's gotten me? Every single girl or girlfriend or partner that was like, because I've been very, very blessed and lucky that basically every partner I've had, I would say was several steps outside of my league. Do you know how I got these girls who were so out of my league? Personality! Personality, okay? I'm a jokester. I learned how to play guitar and sing. I got a hobby. Creative, okay? I ask them questions. You would be, so my friend was, so I have a friend who's a girl, and I was talking about this last night, and I've been very lucky that all of the people that I have like been with are all out of my league. And I was like, but because we were talking exactly on this topic, I was like, but what's funny is like, it's really just because I am interested in what they say. I have follow-up questions and I make eye contact. And she said, you know, as a woman, you would be really surprised how far you can go just showing interest. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Like, you'd be so surprised how many, like, good-looking women, or just people in general, don't get the, like, they don't get the dates that you would expect them to be getting because the other side of the table is someone who is either someone, like, clavicular, who's, like, only, like or just, like, not engaging. Like, you know, if you expect, sorry, I keep hitting the microphone. I'm animated now. If you expect that someone who is like spending their time with you, their precious time in this one life with you at a restaurant or a cafe or a bar or something, and you don't engage in return, like, dude, all you have to do most of the time, if because this is what I'm saying, like, personality brings up your attractiveness level. So even if you see yourself as like a 4, most of the time, and of course I'm not a guru and I would never say it's always worked. I mean, I've had failures over and over and over, but there's enough successes where like, it's okay. Yeah. Cause that's the game. It's all waves, man. It's all waves, right? You can bring yourself from wherever you see yourself, which probably also, by the way, people see you immediately higher than you ever see yourself. There was the guy, the famous YouTube guy who was like, that viral video that was like, here's why I'm ugly. And there was a commenter who was like, actually, I think you're cute. Pretty woman. So out of his league. And now they're married. I think they have a kid now. So there you go. But if you engage, if you're just a person, like, you don't have to go in and be like, I've memorized several knock knock jokes. Like, go in there, look them in the eye. What do you do? What do you like to do for fun? How many siblings do you have? Oh, that's cool. Are you into like astrology or anything? Oh, okay. Did you grow up religious? Oh, and what area of town is that? Oh, that's cool. Okay. Like, listen, ask, be nice. And I guarantee you that will boost, like, not only your sense of self-worth, but also your chances of a second date. It's like, come on. We don't need all this garbage, this internet garbage of like young kids being like, classically insecure and like lonely and not sure what to do. And then they find people like this looks maxing or these manosphere fucking idiots being like, you know what, mate? Well, it's all the chicks' fault, right? Because, you know, because they're on their periods and they can't focus, you know. It's like they get on their cycles, mate, and then they blame you for everything. You know, let's say you want to, you know, I tell my wife all the time, yeah, I'm going to go out there and hang out with other chicks and you're going to have to be okay with that. Go to hell, dude. Like, what? What? Anyway. That was a tangent I did not expect to get so passionate about, but I love you guys for being here. I hope you've, I haven't seen the final cut of this. I don't even know if I've edited this video, but I just want to say thank you for listening. I hope you had fun. Please, if you did enjoy it, like, subscribe, share. It genuinely very deeply helps me a lot. If you want to see my stand-up show, or if you want to like check out my socks or my hot sauce or anything, or if you just want to help keep this show going, there's links in the show notes. I love you guys so much. Thank you very, very, very much for being here, and I hope you have a really wonderful week. And hey, be yourself. That's no one else is you. Be yourself. Be yourself. Because it's the most beautiful thing in the world to be you. Because you're beautiful. Bye-bye. Look out, baby. The saints are coming through. And it's all over now. Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.